Those were some amazing times. But after 10 years of comedy, entertainment, and music, Studio 4109 Live was canceled on my 25th birthday, February 24th, 2021. For many of us, it was the greatest show we'd ever been a part of. It was our family. But after years of decline, a pandemic, and a ceiling that these creators could never hope to break, it was time for one last curtain call. Earlier this spring, Ignite, a show devoted to talking about what's happening on campus and presented by my alma mater, School of Journalism and Communication, had this to say.
So way back when in 2003, 2004, there was a show started on our campus called Studio 4109.
Tell me about Studio.
Think of it kind of as an SNL, Saturday Night Live, for Southern Adventist University.
And it was live then?
It was.
It was all live.
It was completely live up until the year that COVID hit us. Which a lot of things changed that year, but it was basically live sketch comedy combined with some digital shorts that were presented, and then live musical guests and live hosts, and it was very popular back in the day. We even got celebrities like Kevin Olushola, I believe.
Really? Olushola? Kevin Olushola from
Pentatonix.
Yeah.
He came and either he hosted or he was a musical guest artist. So as time passed, as time went on, studio and directors changed and new cast came through.
And I mean, it got farther and farther away from the initial passion, the initial idea.
Exactly. Studio 4109 began becoming less popular. But basically, Studio began losing the audience and the popularity that it had on campus. So just this year, it was announced that Studio 4109 was canceled, and that the funds for Studio were going to be allocated to other venues.
Very sad. I never got to go to one.
This is Phil's Philosophies podcast. A show dedicated to the discovery of the spark, the things that are meaningful in our lives. And for many years, this show, Studio 4109, was just that, a spark. Now, it's gone. This is that story. Part one, That's the Wrong Number.
And we were also trying to figure out what to call the show. And I remember he had mentioned some names of stuff, and I was writing them down, and I was like, oh, there was that one, that studio something. What if we called it Studio Something? So initially we were going to call the show Studio Something, and he kind of ran that idea by some people, and they were all like, it sounds like you just forgot the name. And so we said, okay, well, let's go name it after, this was Tom's idea. Tom said, let's go name it after the room that it's in. Similar to how you had Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, you know, named after the soundstage that it was in, or, you know, the Today Show always starts off with live from Studio A in Rockefeller Plaza, you know, and so you have every soundstage like has its name and its number and all that kind of stuff. So so we said, okay, that's going to be the name. We'll name it after that. So we both went, at the time it was going to be held in the cafeteria. And so we went up there and we swear that it said 4109. We're like, okay, great. That's the name. And it was just like, that's branded. Studio, you know, 41, and it became 4109, and it started to roll off the tongue. And like, the more you said it, it's so weird how like this strange amalgamation of numbers actually became like a thing. It became its own brand, you know, 4109. And we did our first show, and we got to, I don't remember exactly when we realized the error that had been made. But I think when we discovered it, it was kind of too late to change the course, because Tom came to me and he said, Kevin, you know how we've named this show 4109? And I was like, yes. And he said, I don't know if you've walked by that room again, but that's not the number. It's like, what do you mean? It's not the number. Like, we both remember it. And he was like, I know, I remember it being that too. He said, the room's like 3204 or something. And we were like, well, shoot. He said, do you know where 4109 is? And I said, no. He said, well, you know, each level one is going to be your thousands, two is your 2000s, three is your three. And the cafeteria is on the third floor, which is why I was 32 or 30, whatever. He said, 4109 is the fourth floor, the floor up. And it is a small janitor's closet that Campus Ministries has turned into a prayer room. So, you know, when people asked about how the show got named and I would, you know, disclose the whole story, I was like, honestly, the name has become a joke in and of itself. And I think the moral of the story is we just needed a lot of prayer. My name is Kevin Christensen, spelled Christensen, like Chris and Ten and Sun. Sounds simple. Apparently confusing on every form. And my position was executive director and producer for the show. So, ironically enough, the idea for this fun, diverse, like so outside of anything that Southern had really been doing, sketch, comedy, variety, music show, came from an accountant. And I don't want to call him old, but you know, older, not a student, Caucasian male accountant. And he was the finance guy. And he said, you know, I'm looking at because he oversaw the budgets and things for food services. And so he said, you know, I think it would be cool to do some kind of a dinner theater show in the cafeteria, and we can have the calf be open during that time, and we can A, bring in some additional revenue for the calf, but B, you know, provide some healthy alternatives for entertainment for students. And so he brought that idea to the director of Destiny Drama Company, which was a traveling drama company that would, it was made up of Southern students, and we would rehearse on campus. And then most of our performances were off campus. We would travel and do youth rallies and events at mostly academies. And so the associate vice president of finance went to the director of Destiny Drama Company and said, hey, what do you think about this idea? Because you do drama. And the director of the drama company said, yes, and let's make it comedy. And so he brought in me and he brought in another actor from the drama company, and we were kind of brainstorming. We had a bunch of ideas for what the show could be. We had a ton of names, most of which were pretty terrible. Actually, the name that it was going to be, one of the ones was like, I know one of them was like LAF or something. We were going to try and find a way to do an acronym that was LAF and figure out what made sense for, you know, I don't even remember what the acronym was going to be. We just were like, oh, we got to make it spell LAF. And then another idea was changing the show's name every time. And that was going to be super confusing. And we ended up calling it, studio. We were in the car driving to, it was one of our road trips somewhere, and we'd had some brainstorming sessions, me, the director, and the director's name was Tom Goddard. So me, Tom, and this other person that was the other actor in the drama company. And we'd been brainstorming stuff, and the other actor, they were really going to be kind of offered the leadership position first. Cause like I was a freshman, I was like 18 or something, you know, you're not going to hand a totally new show off to a dumb freshman. Right. So, but the other guy who was, I think a senior, he was brainstorming, but wasn't like putting, you know, the pedal to the metal and being like, okay, now we're going to buckle down and do it. And I was tired of just brainstorming, and I really wanted to see something happen. And so I remember we were sitting there. I was in the passenger seat. Tom was driving. And I just pulled out like a notepad and a pen. And I was like, I want to see this thing actually happen. Like, I'm tired of talking about it and I want to do it. And he's like, okay, you know, what do we do? And so we started talking about things, and he knew writers. He said, I can get writers, and obviously I can get actors. And I was like, great. What do you think about this skeleton structure? And what if we had a stage like this and we had lights like this, and, you know, we put it together in this order. And so we just kind of, you know, collaborated together, and he said, okay, I'm going to find our writers, and I'm going to organize our first writers meeting, and we'll go from there.
Well, that was fantastic. And especially, you know, I think, what did we draw? I think the CAF and that setup could handle over 300 and some seats. I think we had 200 and some there. You know, audio visual wasn't perfect, but good enough to get us through the show, as we learned some things, obviously. But yeah, it was exciting to see. And it was exciting. Like I said, I didn't have any big dreams of, you know, backing the place out, turning people away. I was just, it was a Saturday night, it was an alternative, in case, I forget what was even running that Saturday night, but it could have been like volleyball night or something, you know, the 3-on-3 or whatever it was. But for 200 and some students to show up, food was available. It was exciting. And I think, you know, the acting was pretty decent for our first startup. Went well. I'm Doug Frood, and I was, I guess, co-founder and, after a couple of years, the main sponsor of Studio 4109.
Doug is everyone's dad away from home. He's the faculty member who really believes in students and their creativity.
I think it was, for me, it was great. Just, you know, I got to hang out with 30 students that, because of my role as the associate VP for budgeting, I wouldn't normally get to see. So I got to hang out with 30 decently creative, energetic, want to put on a good show, have some fun. And so because of, you know, just the idea I had about starting this, I mean, and that fulfillment of it, I mean, it's been fantastic. The 10 years I got to do it, that, yeah. We had 3-4 Saturday nights a school year where students who had some of those kind of, especially my actors and the writers, got to put something on that, you know, probably half of them had done in their high school academy days as well. And so it was, you know, I think from that standpoint, it just, it was very rewarding to see people take pride in something, be happy about something that they accomplished. And to see some of the crowds that we were drawing, especially when we moved to the gym, and people having a good time on a Saturday night. I mean, just, I felt like I was fulfilling some part of what college was about. You know, one of the things is to hang out, meet people, try new things. And that I was helping fulfill that kind of mission about what the school is about and what you were doing here. I had good friends of mine who sometimes challenged me, you know, that, you know, obviously sometimes we made a mistake, maybe we pushed the envelope too far. And I reminded them, a lot of the young people I was dealing with were also on their own spiritual journey, that we were having conversations. What does comedy in a conservative religious environment mean and look like? And I'll tell you, I think the best person, sadly, this happened, you know, what, 6-7 years downstream, was Pastor Dave Ferguson coming in the group and reminding everybody, think about laughing with versus laughing at. And that really did change the tenor of some things with people within in the group as they thought about that. And we talked about that, and we brought that up on occasion in writers' meeting and said, all right, how are we laughing with instead of laughing at? And as people from a religious background, how should we be doing this? And what's the real purpose of the comedy that we're putting on? And I think as we wrestled with that, but I would tell people that was some of the journey, right? The challenge of saying, you know, as a Seventh-day Adventist institution, how are we helping people find a way to do something like this within our context? You know, scripture says laughter is good like a medicine. Culture has comedy that maybe is more laugh at. How do we do it with a more laugh with? But yeah, I mean, like I said, I had good friends of mine that I respect dearly who at times felt concerned that maybe we'd be turning students away who would come see it and be offended. And I reminded them that I knew that there were students who'd come here because they saw that Southern was willing to sometimes be a little messy, that it didn't have to be perfect, we could make it, and that they would fit in here. So, you know, it's a two-edged sword that's challenging, but I'm happy the institution hung in there for the 10 years with me, because it, I think it made a difference, obviously, to the students who got to perform and some of the students who came.
Doug saw what a lot of us saw. Our school wasn't perfect, and the hope was that we could laugh together about some imperfections. Maybe that opportunity was a huge draw for potential students. I know I was one. My friend Nicole Korp felt the same way.
One of the things that I did as I was looking for which university to attend was Google them. I wanted to learn everything that I could about them, learn about what their students thought about them, what the media thought about them. And again, I was pretty dead set on not attending an Adventist university. But when I Googled Southern and I saw the YouTube page for Studio 4109, I got really excited and I started looking at their videos and I just thought they were the funniest things. It looked like so much fun. It looked like the people were just having so much fun. And I was honestly really excited that an Adventist school would allow for this kind of creativity. I don't know. I think one of my fears in going to an Adventist school was that everyone would just think the same and act the same. And as someone that wasn't coming from the Adventist education system, coming from public school, that was not my world whatsoever. Everyone had different opinions, different thoughts, and so it really helped you to formulate your own. And so then when I saw Studio 4109 and I saw that they were expressing themselves in a very different way, they were making fun of each other and in a very wholesome way, it just made me really excited. And so that's honestly not the main reason, obviously, but definitely one of the reasons that I decided, yeah, Southern Adventist University is for me.
I thought the very same thing, Nicole.
Oh man, there's like favorite sketches that we had. I mean, one of my favorites was Juan Montero Caballero, which was one that I wrote that was about, it was supposed to be a telenovela.
Hola, and bienvenidos to Juan Montero Caballero, a Spanish soap opera for people who have only had a week of conversational Spanish back in high school. Previously on Juan Montero Caballero, Maria learned that Juan was not dead after all. Francisco felt amor for Maria, but Juan felt double amor for Maria. However, a third amor was felt by Ricardo, her secret husband and padre of her bebé. In an accidente misterioso, Ricardo died, leaving Maria alone to care for their son. Ricardo Diego Montoya Lopez Guadalupe Hidalgo Gonzalez Frescon Sanchez Martinez Rivera Perez Iglesias Rodriguez with a G Rodriguez with a Q Lopez de Sego, which they call Kyle for short. But poquito do they know, Ricardo's brother, Sebastian, has custody.
And so everything was like all basic Spanish terms, and we were making some jokes also about like one of the girls announces to, you know, one of the gentlemen there that she's pregnant, which is embarazada. And because of his basic Spanish, he didn't really know what that meant. And he was like, embarrassed? And he and all of our Spanish speaking population that was at the show like busted up laughing. And I think all the white kids were like having to turn to them to be like, why is that funny?
Pero me llamo Juan Montero
Caballero.
Caballero.
Francisco. Ella es mi princesa, mi amor, mi Jennifer Lopez, mi Salma Hayek, mi Shakira.
I also just loved doing the feed, our news feed portion. That was a mix of, it was Weekend Update meets The Daily Show, and I just loved coming up with those jokes, and because I also got to deliver half of it. That was a portion that I co-hosted, and it was really fun to just watch people laugh and respond and smile to the words that, you know, you've written. And there's just not another feeling like that. So those are a few of my favorites. So it was fun to work with people that, you know, especially we could either lean into their element, or, I mean, all-time favorite host is Dr. Gordon Beetz. I mean, you can't go wrong with him. And he got so into it, and it was fun to like take him out of his professional element. I don't want to say take him out of his element, because honestly, I've never seen that dude more alive than when we had him in sketches. And I would see him at, you know, everybody knew, oh, Dr. Beetz, who was also like a pastor before, and, you know, this like humble respect. And, you know, and you'd think that he would only be talking about, you know, very formal kinds of things and stuff. And like, he would see me and he'd be like, when are we doing another show? You know? And he was like so into it and so much fun. And we actually got him to rap on a track that has never been released for various reasons. But he was game for it. He recorded it. We did a whole Indiana Jones thing with him. He was just so much fun with this stuff. And, you know, just, and he was game for whatever. And it was such a cool thing, I think, for the students also to engage with him on that level, to be like, oh, wow, you're really down to earth. You're really fun. And you're about this.
Those crazy conspiracy theories. And now to the real work. Finding Kylo Ren.
Back in 2011, a guy who works in finance was trying to find a new show. And that was Doug Frood. Kevin Christensen was just a lanky freshman who acted here and there, and Tom Gardard was also part of the same acting crew. But Kevin tells me that eventually Destiny Drama and Studio needed a new leader. He had to be that guy, but he burned out quickly, eventually boarding a plane to China and then to Spain for a year. Oh, and just to add to Kevin's list, he was working on not one, but two bachelor's degrees at the same time. But Studio kept growing, leaving its humble beginnings in the cafeteria where they could host up to 200 students, to the 1,000 students, faculty, staff, and community all gathered in the gymnasium. The show had finally arrived, and it was the only one of its kind.
And we had, like I said, about 1,000 people that were there. And it was really cool to see that culture of people owning stuff. And you know, whether it was their character or their script or even, I mean, our production teams, you know, when we started diving into film production and, you know, the hours that they would put into like perfecting it and really making it something that they were proud of, that was the thing that I wanted to embed into the team was it. And it started with our writer's room, because that's where all the ideas first started for the show. It started in the writer's room, and I was like, you know, recognize that you are here because we sorted through, and we used to get, I mean, 100 applicants in a day. You know, we would get, I was like, look, you're here because we sorted through and you guys were the best, but that doesn't mean that the first thing that you write is going to be solid gold. So we're going to stay here and we are going to, you know, productively pick each other's scripts and ideas apart until we collaboratively get something that you walk out there and you're proud to have your name on, not something where they're like, who wrote that? I don't know. You know, something where if they forget to give you credit, you're upset. Like, I want you to own it. And that was something that had not really been taught in my other classes. I mean, we had so many classes that were attendance based, you know, show up, get the credit, like answer, you know, do okay with stuff and congratulations, you passed and you got a degree. Yeah. I mean, this, the phrase C's get degrees is 100% true. So, you know, there wasn't stuff that was really teaching ownership of things. And I really wanted to have that attitude in studio of like, this is going to be something that you're going to own. You're going to be proud of, because you're going to be out on stage in front of 1,000 of your peers. And do you want to look stupid or do you want to have something that you're proud of? And people go, wow, look at your talent. So own it, you know? And that was what we did.
Studio was so much bigger than its cast, however, as Kevin would tell you. I reached out to another old friend of mine who worked on some of Studio's best remembered digital shorts. He was also a guy who'd been there at the very beginning of it all, back in 2011. It's Matt Webster.
There, of course, is always going to be the argument, was Studio too edgy, right? That's always an argument that pops up with Studio. And yes, it's going to depend on who you are within the audience, but people don't realize how many committees we went through to get stuff approved. It's not us just writing and fully going out there. Like, we had to vet everything through committees and we got this stuff approved. So that's what I would say back to people, like, well, Studio was too edgy. It got approved by committees. So if it's too edgy, you can go talk to that committee of like Southern Admin. We had Southern Admin on those committees. And yeah, we had stuff sent back to us and we had to redo it.
Got one more class to pass. I said, you can kiss my what? Mother's cheek when you tell her I died. I've cried, I've tried and tried to shake this class. But no matter what I do, beats be like, you shall not pass.
Another one, trying to graduate.
I'm trying to graduate now, but they won't let me. No, looks like my loan just ran out of money. Out of money. Don't got no FAFSA. No FAFSA. Or financial aid. Surprise. 200 credits, still can't graduate.
That one was fun as well. Like, trying to graduate, they won't let me. Looks like my loans ran out of money. Yes, I still remember this. That one was a fun one. Beats' retirement video was a fun one that we did. Just doing all the different things from Star Wars to Indiana Jones to making it look like there's a shootout going on, him turning into Commissioner Gordon.
Superman was fighting an evil force in Chattanooga, and Batman was getting in his way. So he turned to Dr. Beats to rally support, saying, Batman's trying to stop me. I need your help. And Beats agrees to help him. But in reality, he's actually Commissioner Gordon. So he's secretly working with Batman to stop Superman. And Batman's all like, you're not the commissioner we need, but the one we deserve. Or something weird that doesn't make sense. And then he disappears in a cloud of smoke.
And so he's retiring to help Batman.
Superheroes? Okay, that's crazier than Tina's theory.
It makes total sense. His name's Gordon.
Yeah, that was like the last thing I made for Studio. And that one, oh man. As a senior trying to graduate with like 5 weeks left at Southern and also trying to coordinate Beats' schedule to get all that done, that was so crazy to try and do because Beats' schedule as president was like all over the place. And then it's like, well, my schedule is all over the place. And it's kind of like, hey, Beats, can you give me some slack with my professors because we're making you look good in this? Come on. So that one was fun as well. I know I'm missing other ones. We did prescription depression or after, no, singleness. It was prescription singleness with Evan Johnson. And that one was fun because it's like singleness, like because of singleness, I can be myself. it was just basically like, let's see if we can do like a prescription ad commercial for singleness for all the single people on campus. So yeah, that one was fun. And then of course the studio intros, like the intros to every studio that we shot. There's a whole nother story with shooting those intros. Like, 1 year we had to reshoot the intro like 3 times, and that's going back to those committees. And that because it's like, shoot at beginning of the year, be done with it, so you can focus on the other shorts. But to be honest, yeah, we had to reshoot it like 3 times for, we had like 5 or 6 shows a year, and we had to reshoot it for almost half the year. That took a lot of time too. So going back to those committees, yeah, those committees would turn down stuff and we had to redo stuff sometimes. So I think the thing that it really helped me with professionally is, well, it built a portfolio for me, so people knew what kind of work I could do. It was also interesting coming out because they're like, well, studio is kind of like satire content. It's of course having fun and everything. And then it always begged the question of like, well, will people take that seriously per se if I'm going out to get a job? And it did, like people took that seriously. Out here in Hawaii, they saw what I was doing and they were just like, well, if you're working at a high school, which I am, like that kind of content could get students engaged out here as well. Not saying that we're going to create our own studio out here or even like be able to do that, because of course less resources than we have at Southern at a high school level, but it really got engaged. I've shown some of these to my students. They're like, what, you did that at Southern? I'm like, yeah, we did that at Southern. I'm like, and we even, I just remember, and I think Kevin will go into this with you, like, yeah, one of the writers from Jimmy Fallon watched our show and like took notice of it. And it got that type of attention. Like even Chattanooga Times Free Press gave us attention. And like, we were getting press about what we were doing at Southern with this show. And then it became the questions of like, well, who's creating your digital content? Who's directing studio? And that's like, I know, and when you talk to Kevin will tell you how it got him connections. It got me connected to people. Like when I came straight out of college, I was doing some independent work and we were able to do some around Chattanooga before I headed out here to Hawaii. And it still keeps me in connections with that today. It helped grow me as a filmmaker, because in the environment we had at studio, going through drafts and revisions of these edits, we had a professional environment that was acting like an official studio. It wasn't just like a, hey, go make this, Matt, and just turn it in and it's good. No, it was just like, if it wasn't good, Kevin would send it back. Like, go redo it. Like, we're still on deadlines. If it's not gonna make the show, it's not gonna make the show. I don't want it to not make the show. But basically, we had a job. We were technically working for studio. And it's like, do your best. I need 110%. And that's what made studio. And if you look at studio, the original people that were in studio who started to graduate out, we wanted to keep that legacy alive within studio of keeping going what we, like what Kevin built, what a lot of us were there. Because yeah, like a lot of us were there technically 5 years, not 4 years. And we saw it. And yeah, that was always the question of like, how long will studio go?
Back in 2016, everyone was asking this question.
How long will studio go?
Unbeknownst to anyone back then, studio had reached the halfway point. 5 years in and 5 years to go. But it wasn't necessarily just time that killed off studio. My studio family claimed something different. And I recognize that maybe these opinions could get some people in trouble, but I'm going to leave a few in here so that maybe you can put it together. But I am going to be a little bit obvious.
And then we all kind of know that marketing at Southern was not really our favorite people, I hate to say. I wish we could have been friends with marketing at Southern with studio, but you get into the whole conversation of, well, the studio really represents Southern. You can get into a whole argument with that, but it was kind of disappointing that marketing did not like studio, because it was a great thing for campus. And there was always this back and forth. And like I said, when we went to the Times Free Press, they blew up that Times Free Press was covering something at Southern, and it kind of went around their marketing department. It was like, well, they came to us first. They didn't talk to you guys because you guys would probably have told them no, to be completely honest. And we had a PR director on studio. So our PR director talked straight to the press and was a communications major. So it was just like, come on guys, we're getting you guys like positive press for Southern. which means more students are going to probably hopefully come. Come on. Like, what's the issue with it? And to this day, like, they still never really gave us a reason why. And then after our last season I was on studio, of course, Beats retired. And we all kind of knew after Beats retired, something was probably going to go down the line with studio, which it eventually did. They reduced the number of shows. And then they kind of put the handcuffs on studio, I hate to say, which eventually killed it, like after another 5 years, because you have the initial 5 years of, like, you could say, the like, in its prime. And then after, like, season six and season seven, because I kept around just to see a little bit what studio was doing, trying to keep connected. Like, I would call Doug Fruit a little bit. And of course, Doug likes to talk, so Doug would be like, oh, this is what's going on. He's like, are you back in the area? Could you, like, do it? And, like, yeah, after I left, the video producer position kind of just was contracted out every show. Like, it was contracted out every show. They didn't actually hire, like, an official person. Like, I understood that because it's just, like, to be honest, like, filmmakers are busy. And then you have some people who are doing film in the communications department at Southern. And that's what's a little bit different.
And that's why I was so proud of every actor, writer, director, producer, even our marketing team that we had on it. We had, and there's a funny story about that as well, because we had somebody who was so fantastic with marketing. Every meeting she was like, our Snapchat engagement is up like 200%, and our Facebook engagement is up like 300%, and our Twitter following is up 115%. It was just like every stat was up all the time. And she got us a publication in the Times Free Press, and so, like, the School of Journalism and Communication was really proud of her. And by the way, she went on to go be a content producer for the US Open. And it was funny because marketing was upset. Like, university marketing, like, wrote to us, and they were like, you went to the press and didn't go through proper channels and blah, blah, blah. Basically, you didn't go through us, and so we're not happy about it. Which was funny because she actually had initially, like, I saw the emails of all this stuff. She had initially tried to go to them and work together with them, and they said, we don't support studio. It doesn't reflect the university. And so essentially it was like, no, we're not going to work with you. And then she went and, you know, got this thing that was recognized. And then at the Society of Avenus Communicators event that happened every year, and they recognized individuals for their work, she got an honorable mention award specifically for Studio 4109 marketing. So here she's getting recognized on a national level. She's getting recognized by the School of Journalism Communication, and marketing was coming in and being like, how dare you, you know, do stuff.
I wanted to spend some time talking with Kevin's right-hand woman during Studio's best years during his leadership. Here's my new friend, Amanda.
My name is Amanda Alvarez, and I kind of did a lot of different things. My freshman year of Studio, I was kind of just a stagehand. This was Kevin's first year as kind of, it wasn't the inaugural year, but it was kind of the first year Kevin was heading everything. And so I was just kind of a volunteer stagehand. My second year there was Kevin's year abroad in Spain. So I was Vince's AD, Cantrell, Vince Cantrell. I was his AD. I kind of did like the coordinating and the schedules for actors, writers, those kinds of meetings. Then I also would do, I would take notes at all the meetings and stuff for Vince and I to go through afterwards to kind of figure out what ideas we wanted to kind of like brainstorm more on with the writers for the shows. And then it was kind of my junior and senior year where I was Kevin's right-hand man or woman for the entirety of it. I scheduled rehearsals. I was at rehearsals. I scheduled all, same thing I kind of did for Vince, but I did it with Kevin, and I was kind of a lot more involved, even with like with Doug and everyone just even for like the planning at the beginning of the year to see how many shows we're going to do, what's the budget, all that kind of stuff, and coordinating all of that. So kind of studio was the one consistent thing I did every year in college.
Honestly, no other school had something like we had. Studio was special, and for many of us, it inspires the work that we do today.
Honestly, so it was my favorite part of college. It weirdly is kind of what kind of gave me this niche to what I like to do. I'm very like schedule oriented. I'm very like problem solving. So it's kind of like I would get everyone's schedules and just piecing them together would be very satisfying for me. So in a way, it kind of like connected to what I do now career-wise. Not so much of scheduling, but just kind of like problem solving. And it was super fun getting to be involved in the writers' meetings and like toss out ideas. Like, I'm not a writer. I'd like to think I'm somewhat funny, not super funny. I'm not an actor. I think I tried acting once in like some Spanish skit at the beginning of one of the semesters. Not an actor, but I like the behind the scenes portion of it. So just, you guys be funny, I'll help. I would stand in every so often and like read lines because I've read the script so many times that I'm like, I can fill in here and there. Like, let's say someone couldn't show up for rehearsal for a couple hours or if they're a little late. But yeah, that part. And then like, it was always super fun to like schedule and do kind of the filming of like the little skits or like the music videos that we did. And yeah, so that part was super fun. It kind of ties into, so my fiance is in the film world here. And so every so often I'll go on set with him and they're like, are you in the industry? And I'm like, no, but I sort of did this in college. So I get the like somewhat grasp of it that way.
I asked Amanda about the time studio was featured in the Chattanooga Times Free Press, the local newspaper. I thought it was her who was behind getting studio into the newspaper, but it looks like it was Kevin. Back at it again.
Okay, so I actually had to call Kevin to ask him this because when you messaged me, you were like, you spoke to the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and I was like, I had started typing out to you. I was like, did I do that? If I did, I don't remember. And so I called Kevin after work today. I was like, hey, did I do that? I was like, I might have. I feel like if I did, it was the very, very last show. And I remember we had Matt Chancey was our musical guest. And I asked him, I was like, did I do that? Was it me? And it was actually him. But I remember that being a thing where he interviewed with them and they did an article on him. So that was actually Kevin, not me. Honestly, when I called him today, he was like, I don't know, I think it was you. And I was like, I don't know. I've also done things as if it was me for you, so I don't know. But no, he was the one quoted on that, so not me.
There are obviously so many incredible people a part of Studio's first 5 years. And while this could quickly become a reunion about some of the greatest moments, I do want us to continue to think about how this series ended after 10 years. Because all good things do come to an end.
It was something that, you know, I built it, not alone with other people, but, you know, I really put my energy and a lot of myself into the show. And I think that's really a lot of what it took. Part of the reason for why we got it to the point of having, you know, the size audience that it did, which I didn't realize how big of a deal that was until I was on a TV show working with somebody who he does a lot of production stuff for Kevin Hart, and his background was doing a lot of the Def Jam comedy tours. And we were talking and I told him about this and he was like, 1,000 people? I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, it was my school and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, it's just, you know, it's this little thing, whatever. And he was like, he said, don't put that down at all. He said, that's an accomplishment. He said, I've worked with some of the greatest comedians in the world. And, you know, we couldn't sometimes fill a room with half that many people. So he said, you know, and it was one of those wake up calls of like, oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm like, when you're being validated by someone who you respect, you're like, oh, okay, cool. So, you know, I think, I mean, a big reason for why it got to that point was because I made that my life. Like you can ask my friends, like I ate, slept and breathed studio. And I wanted to encourage other people to do the same thing with not the whole organization, but with whatever role they were given. If you're a writer, man, put yourself into that script, like put your heart into it, make that something that you're so proud of, like, you know, really own it. Because there's not a lot of other things on campus that are going to like encourage you to really own it or hold you to that standard. And the nice thing was, is I was like, you know, if you're not going to own it, there's a line of people that want your position. So, you know, like you're great. That's why you're here. But also, you know, don't stop that. Keep that going and own it. This is the place for those kind of dreamers. And so, you know, it was a little bittersweet and sad to hand that off to other people. The other thing was, when I left, my last year was also the last year for a lot of other people who had been doing it for several years. So they knew the game, you know, they knew the routine. They knew what worked and what didn't. And so handing it off to someone who had not been a part of the show before, and them having to bring on a lot of new cast and crew that had also never been a part of the show before, you know, I knew that there was going to be a learning curve and there was probably going to be a drop in some quality. And so, you know, it was one of those things where I had to close the book and like, okay, this is the last chapter. You know, what happens after this, I have no control over. If it's great, I can't take the credit. It doesn't reflect me. If it's really bad, I can't take the blame. It doesn't reflect me. You know, and that's why it wasn't the Kevin show. It was 4109. And I, you know, there'd been somebody else who had run it the year that I was gone in Spain. So it's not like it had never been handed off before. But you know, I could only take credit and blame for the years that I ran it. And I knew that. And so really for my own like mental peace, it was, okay, this is the end of it. I'm closing this chapter. It's been great. Thank you all. And whatever happens, happens after this.
I'm not gonna lie, I cried. I'm not good with goodbyes in the first place. And it was just, like I said, I mean, and everyone says it, like, it was my highlight of Southern. I mean, some people might have good, like, college experiences there. I wouldn't per se say like it was my favorite college experience. It wasn't the worst, but I think like a lot of times, like even there, I remember there was the time, I think it was my senior year, where I was trying to graduate in the 4 years, you know, so I was cramming a lot of credits. I was cramming like work on top of that. And I had two different jobs on top of studio. So then I remember telling Kevin, I was like, hey, like, I don't think I can do studio. And he goes, well, what if we just kind of like step you back a little bit, and you don't have to be at every rehearsal. You can be at the rehearsals you can be at, but you don't have to be at every single one. And that really helped. But I remember thinking back and I was like, well, I almost like, you know, quit on this just because at a time. And I was like, you know, I was trying to put academics before leisure, but at the same time, it wasn't leisure. Like, it sounds cliche, but, you know, studio was family. Like, a lot of the people from studio I'm still close friends with today. Like, you know, Kevin, Jonathan, Nathaniel Melville. And so it was just, you know, it was something hard to let go of and see it go on to someone else. And then I remember I came back for a show. I wanted to say it was a year and a half removed. And it was still nice to be there, but it didn't obviously feel the same, because it's like, you know, you're not managing it. You're not seeing all the work that was put into like the rehearsal time, the like coordination, writing the scripts. Like, you don't know the like the punchlines ahead of time, so you're not like waiting for like, oh, how's this joke gonna land. Like, I remember this being hilarious at the like reading table and all that stuff. So it was honestly sad to let go of. And then the house band, so Jonathan and his band sang 30 Seconds to Mars, Kings and Queens, and it's just, every time I hear it, it's just, that's what studio meant to me. So I usually just show that.
Like Amanda was just mentioning, there was a pretty talented house band for the longest time during studio's years in the cafeteria as well as at the gym. To talk with us about it, it's Jonathan Blackburn, who ended up going to our university for business but now lives in Nashville, Tennessee, pursuing the very thing he did during those fun Saturday nights, music.
But yeah, we would go through, it would take us a long time. Like it would usually take us like a whole like evening. We just block out a whole night and just argue about songs because the four of us have such like drastically different musical tastes and influences that's also part of why we never really like sat down and wrote our own originals together, because we wanted to be four completely separate genres of band. But we always, every show we wanted to do something like something super old, something classic, something brand new, and then for our like closer, something that would completely surprise whoever was listening to us. And so that's why like we would do Hall and Oates, and then we would do Love Yourself by Justin Bieber, like something that was on like on pop top 40 right now. You think I'm crying on my own, well, I didn't want to write a song. And then we would close off with like A Thousand Miles by Vanessa Carlton, or just, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. We tried to mix it up a little bit.
Make my way across town, walking fast, faces past, and I'm homebound.
Okay. My name is Jonathan Blackburn. The role in studio kind of evolved over time. It was, but the actual official role we had at studio was I was part of the house band, the second house band. We were the ones sandwiched in between Reform East that got it kicked off, and Nate Melville took over for us once we left. But we were house band for seasons 3, 4, and 5, I believe. Yeah. It was good times. Started out as kind of like the studio housewife though, because Kevin was my roommate and he started it. So it was a lot of like late night stupid sketch ideas and voices and bits that we would do together. And I'd get home from classes and he'd be like, sit down, I'm going to run the feed for you and you have to laugh and tell me that it's funny. And so a lot of that at first, but then transitioned into the band. I mean, like Kevin's still my best friend. Like I love that kid. He's ridiculously, ridiculously talented. I say that in case he ever listens to this episode so he doesn't text me. Super talented. So I remember like the very beginning of studio when it started and we were watching SNL together and he was like, man, we just need something like this at Southern. We just need like a creative outlet for humor that didn't exist yet. And so we kind of were doing our own things, and I was doing the music thing at Southern and he was doing comedy and business and more of like essay and leadership and that sort of thing. So we kind of had our own two separate paths, and I really never felt the need or the desire to like kind of step over. We kind of just didn't want to step on each other's toes. Like studio was his thing and I didn't really want to like try and elbow my way in and try and take a piece of his baby and kind of try and take over. And so for the first two seasons, that's why I kind of like, I was a big fan. I was like, I'll help out wherever you guys need. My car was in one of the really early on music videos for a split second, which was fun. Just like little things like that. But he actually went and studied in Spain for a year. And that was when me and the buddies that would eventually make up the band, we played for Lawn Concert. And Vince Cantrell, who was standing in as the creative director, he came and approached us and was like, hey, would you guys be willing to come be house band? And so that's when I kind of reached out to Kevin. And I was like, dude, are you comfortable with this? Like, we want to do this, but I don't want to like take your baby. And it ended up falling into pretty good, like sectioned off. I'll take the music side of things. You still run the creative and comedy side of things. And we worked pretty well together that way.
Every creative at a traditionally conservative Christian university has always felt stifled in some way. Yes, there are ways to be involved, and there's a time to perform, a time to praise, a time to do Bible study, and a time to join a choir, but a time to entertain? Those opportunities were few and far between.
And Southern as a whole gave me huge, huge musical opportunities that I'll always be appreciative of. But in my mind, there's kind of like different categories of music and kind of what I want my artist career to be. And most of the opportunities that Southern gave were either in an ensemble, which is hugely beneficial for any musician, regardless of what you want to do in music. Join a choir. It teaches you how to sing, teaches you how to blend and work with other people and not be as attention grab. Like, it teaches your voice how to do a whole bunch more things than just sing, or an ensemble like orchestra or whatever, you know, a bunch of those things. The times it let me get behind a mic was a lot of worship leading, which I really, really very, very seriously want to keep separate from the rest of artistry, because I think the purpose behind leading worship is so vastly different than everything else. It's not about you. It's not about your performance. It's not about, can you hit that dope run at the end of the song that blows everybody away? Can you get that standing ovation? Like, none of that is the point of why you lead worship. And so Southern helped build a lot of that, but there wasn't an outlet to be like, how do I become a better entertainer? How do I become a better performer and get that, the other side of music down? And so studio, yes, massive, massive opportunity to like, just iron out how to be better on stage. Cause at first, dude, I was so like, just rough, man. I'll go back and watch the videos now. And I'm so thankful that it happened and it taught me so much, but dude, they're so cringy at first. Like, there's such a learning curve to being in front of people. And it was a rocky, rocky road for a while. So I mentioned the after parties before, like you were a part of them. After the show would end, we would go to Steak and Shake and we just eat bad food and be stupid. And the servers were probably so annoyed because it was just like a bunch of hyper energized, like we just got done with our show and our adrenaline hasn't died yet, but like beats would come and everybody would come and hang out. The after party after we premiered the Katie video was one of the funniest things ever, because like that video meant a lot to us. It was really fun. That was probably one of the more higher production ones that we did, especially at the time. I think that was the highest production value we had done in a video so far.
Going back into the ones that I made, probably the one that got the most attention right off the bat was called Katie. We did one called Katie, and it was basically this group of guys just trying to get recognized by this one girl on campus named Katie. And it was just like, and we just made it into a musical number back in the day. And oh man, that's what blew up pretty fast.
Does it even matter? Look, I think I'm going crazy for Katie. We should be student missionaries and spend a year in Haiti. Be volunteer doctors.
Like, we had Kevin and Blackburn going around, and oh man, a lot of us were basically like filming all over campus. Like, I think Southern like was reconstructing the CAF around that time, so there's even shots in there if you look really closely of like construction going on that people kind of forget. You know, that like hallway that goes up to the CAF, they made it like all that green color and everything. They were redoing that hallway at the time, and I was like, I don't know why we want to shoot here, but we'll figure it out anyway. And yeah, that was fun because like, yeah, we had the guys in suits sitting in the Halsey Wellness Center hot tub. Yeah, we got them in there.
I don't know. I usually just show like, we did a video, which I'm pretty sure it's still on YouTube now. It's the Katie video. Just say yes, don't give me maybe. This girl, you'll be driving me crazy. Katie, be my lady. Lady, be my lady. Oh, Katie.
And we went to Steak and Shake that night and our server's name was Katie and we lost our minds. We were laughing so hard because like it's this massive table of like 20, 25, 30 people, like all the cast, all the crew, everybody. And we just started cracking up because we were like, your name is Katie and that's the best thing we've ever heard. And she was like, thank you, weirdos. And she was super funny. Dude, we called her over and because we're all just so like hyper because we just, our adrenaline hasn't tanked yet. And we called her over and she sat down at the table and like me and Nate and John and Kevin, basically everybody in the video, Jerome, we like got up and like surrounded her and did like a very, very like unplugged acoustic, like Backstreet Boys version of Katie. And we sang Katie a cappella for her in the Steak and Shake for like a bunch of strangers that were like, what are these kids on? Like, what is going on? It was one of the funniest things ever. And we're like weeping. We're laughing so hard and no one in Steak and Shake knew what was going on. They were like, please, please eat your freaking food and leave this place because you guys are wild and we don't want you here.
Making my way down to Comp 101, running through the parking lot. I can't tell where the classroom is, but I know it's not. They tell me I'm too late to take the quiz. They say there's nothing I can do, so I'll just crawl back up the stairs to my seat. And that's the last thing I knew. So wake me up when class is over, when I'm wiser and slightly older. All this time I was catching up sleep, and I didn't know they had gone. So wake me up when class is over, forgive me drooling on your shoulder. All this time I was finding the page, and I didn't know they had gone.
Yeah, like the Wake Me Up music video with Tony Nobili, like we recorded that at like 8 a.m. in the morning in the studio. And it was like, they were like, hey, like come in, sing the song. It's an Avicii song. Like come sing Wake Me Up. And I was like, oh, dope. This is gonna be awesome. And so I went in, but it was like 8 a.m, which is stupid high for that early in the morning. And this was like back before I was like really, really good at like protecting my voice and understanding my voice and like knowing how to like take care of it and use it in a professional way. And so it was like 8 a.m. and I was like, all right, we're gonna do this. And right at the end, he jumps like an octave. And I was like, Brandon, my guy, there's no way this is happening. And so I was in the studio and I was like, this stinks. Cause this is like one of the first times I had done something musically. This is still back before I was banned. So I was like, this is one of the first musical things. And I was like, I obviously don't want to blow this, cause I would love to still keep doing this in the future. And so I was like, oh shoot, how can I get around this? And if you remember at the end of that video, I just kind of lose my mind and start screaming. And I was like, what if, because this guy keeps falling asleep in class. And I was like, what if he just loses it and has like a mental breakdown at the end? And I just start screaming, and they were like, oh, I love that. It's so funny. And I was like, perfect. I'm never going to tell you. It's just because I can't sing this part at 8 a.m. We're just going to work our way around that. But yeah, I mean, like when I think back on studio, I just think of stuff like that. Of like we went out and thrift shopped like all of those suits that we made for the Katie video, and like recorded in the hot tub, and we got it and like bleached from the chest down, like all of those from the chemicals in the hot tub just bleached our suits, and they were gross. So funny, man. We shot the intro video in an abandoned warehouse down in Chattanooga and got in trouble for it because we were accidentally trespassing. All kinds of stuff, man. It's just so much. Like the I'm So Broke music video, Kevin wrote for probably 2 weeks in our dorm room. And that beat was probably the hardest beat we used in any studio song, because Katie was a lot more lyrical than I'm So Broke. I'm So Broke just went hard. And I don't think I've listened to that music video since it premiered in the show, because it's just so deep in my subconscious, a hatred for that beat, because it was playing for like 23 out of 24 hours a day for like 3 weeks, just bumping in our dorm room all the time. And I couldn't get away from it. And it was so, dudes, there's no way to separate like my memories of Southern from my memories of studio. It was just such a massive part of everything.
So yeah, when I saw the accent article, like I'm glad they're getting the accent out actually past Southern now, just not just the papers on campus. Like even us alumni can see it digitally. When I saw that they were discontinuing studio, the first reaction, like I had something boil up in me. I'm like, do I call Doug and talk about this? Like, what is going on? Did you guys run out of funding for studio? What's going on? Like, what do you need help with? That was like my first reaction of being a studio alum, and was like, how can we keep this going? Because we know the impact that this had on Southern's campus. And it's just like, Doug, what are you fighting? Like, what can we help with? Like, hey, I'm still paying off my student loans, unfortunately, still from going to Southern. I don't have much money, but do you guys like, I'll donate to this, because this is something that I was passionate about. And if you need us to return the favor, like I'll give you what I can, but let's figure out a way. You want me to fly back from Hawaii to come in for like 5 days and like do a workshop? What do you need me to do? What can we do to keep this alive? And now that it's officially, I guess you could say, retired, like from studio being done, it's always kind of the question of like, well, could the alumni basically take it away from? Let me rephrase that. Could the alumni take it and like basically own it in a way? Because this was like a pride, not like a pride thing, but it was kind of like we were how we were involved with this, and just like, well, maybe down the line, don't know where we're gonna go. Like, we could do more stuff and basically have the studio name still. Like, studio could continue somehow. I know we're all doing different things now, but it's kind of like a brainstorm idea out there. And yeah, I don't know if that's possible or not. Studio was my family at Southern. Like, when you spend so much time with them from like, okay, guys, we gotta do another take, let's do another take. And it's like, hey, I'm getting super close up to you with this camera. And like, you're spending like, basically we sacrificed our Fridays because classes ended at like, or none of us had classes on Fridays. We sacrificed Fridays to go film all this stuff. And it was basically like, we spent the whole day, even weekends together, like, and then some of us would be in the editing suite together and making sure all this was getting done. And it's just like, you spent so much time with this family that it became your family. Something I'll always remember with this is actually right before my last episode was season 5, before I graduated. Right in the middle when we were doing Pizza's retirement, the Old Told Story video, my grandfather actually passed away during that. And during that time, it was a little bit of a hard time because I was hoping that he would live long enough to see my graduation. So I was dealing with that in the last weeks of school, the last weeks of making Beats' video. And I was just like, it was kind of more of a like, I have to keep moving to get this done and get the video done. And we didn't get the video done until like 3 days before the last episode. And within those 3 days, I just had to separate myself for 3 days to get ready for that last show. And if you go back and watch it, I think it's up back on Studio's page. Like on that last show, they just recognized me because I'm a behind the scenes guy. I'm not the guy on the stage. I'm the one sitting behind everything. And he took that time to like recognize like what the video team did and then also say the situation that went through and just kind of recognize that. And that meant the world. Like it was a tough time during that time, but that's where the family aspect came in. Like that family had your back. Like when I was done making that video, like I had people reaching out to me left and right from the studio family, making sure we were good. A few of us went out to eat a few nights and they had my back. That's what ultimately also the studio family was too. That studio family was your family. I haven't, even going to today, still keep in contact with them. They make sure that we're doing good. And yeah, that's also what I gained out of the studio that still continues with me. Here we are 5 years later.
And that's our show. In the next episode, we'll discover the new era. Kevin, Jonathan, Amanda, and Matt had all graduated in 2016, and they left behind a new group in charge of studio. This was a new era with new problems to worry about, and there were brand new leaders across the board, both students and administrators. And as studio's season 5 finale came and went, the plans were already rolling for season 6. But the writing was already on the wall. Stay tuned for the next episode in this series and learn how our spark just started to flicker. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Phil's Philosophies podcast. If you enjoyed this one, let your friends know, share it, talk about it. You know the rules. And until the next episode, I'll see you next time.